from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Lockport High School's CM Punk. Most famous Lockport alum? It's probably Punk. I think you got it.
Somebody's reading Wikipedia.
Afternoons on the Score.
Now, people didn't really like playing against AJ. Did you like playing with AJ?
I loved it. I mean, listen, the further you get away from the game, now this is my 10th year out of the game, you know, you look back and all you think of is the guys that, you know, who did you respect, who showed up to play, who was, all the other stuff kind of falls to the wayside, and you just look back and you think of the guys you played with that showed up to play every day, that they respected you and you respected them, and that's really that, like, all that's left when it's all over. And, you know, AJ showed up to play, and you know, especially as a catcher, as AJ will tell you, in the 94 draft, I was the first catcher selected.
Oh,
yeah. So I always had a soft spot in my heart for catcher.
That is Paul Konerko on the broadcast on Saturday talking about AJ. Lots of good stuff from Paul Konerko. Dan Bernstein is in here in the afternoon with me, Matt Spiegel. I still remember, Bernsey, you calling me after Konerko had been on with you and Terry Bores. You remember that?
Yeah, it was on for like 45 minutes.
He was on for 45 minutes. It was an unbelievable baseball conversation. You guys were on in the afternoon. Me and Dan McNeil were on in the middays, and you called me because you just, like, you loved the conversation, and you wanted to know if I'd heard it, because he talked so much about what? Soft factors, clubhouse chemistry, leadership, and Paulie was a dude.
And he, when he wants to talk,
incredible.
When he is in a mood to talk, he is phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's also because he spent so much of his career in his head. And I think, you know, Gordon Beckham being, you know, sort of learning at his hand, it might have been good, it might have been bad for him. It might have cut both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because being around Konerko and thinking about things in the way that Konerko does is, not everybody can do it.
Yeah, that's right. He was able to live in his head and still get out there and perform.
Yeah.
And Beckham was living in his head and not performing.
But you know, Paulie had some entire years.
Yeah.
That were like lost years because he was spiraling in his own head.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I guess when you remove from the pressure of it, in being able to, he seems so comfortable and so happy in his middle age.
Seems incredible.
But that guy, yeah, that day, he was just like, we're like, hey, man, you run with it.
Look, we want to talk about AJ Pierzynski, White Sox managerial candidate. If you're just turning on the radio, the headline of the day is that the Sox have traded Eric Fetty and Michael Kopech and Tommy Pham in the same trade. Two of them going to the Cardinals. Kopech going to the Dodgers. And in exchange, they've gotten Miguel Vargas, a very good prospect for the Dodgers, who's been bad on the big league level.
No longer a prospect.
Well, at 24, some of these guys, you know, sometimes maybe you consider him a quad A guy. He's an MLB-ready player who has been handed a job the last couple of springs for the Dodgers, and it hasn't gone well offensively. But three times in the minors, he had an OBP well above 400.
The others are 19-year-old A-ball infielder Gerald Perez, 20 and 19-year-old infielder from rookie ball Alexander Albertus.
Yeah, so those are two guys in the top 20, the low end of the top 20, or I believe maybe top 25 of Dodgers prospects. But Vargas is a guy who is plug and play on the big league level, and see if he can show it on the big league level here. It can play the outfield, can play third base, can play a bunch of different spots. But if you're underwhelmed by how much three different players have gotten you in a White Sox return, join the club.
So I'm on a couple channels when it comes to AJ as potential White Sox manager. And now, and again, his denials, I'm sure he's telling the truth about anything official that's happened. However, I also believe that there's a way to not tell the whole truth.
I feel like you mischaracterized the denial in your question to Willie Harris. I feel like it's important to say that because I listened to the denial that he issued today, and all he said was that they haven't contacted him. Do we have any of the denial from today, Chris Tannehill? He admitted to his interest again. He just basically said, they have a manager and I haven't heard from him.
And I am pleased to be joined by the 2025 Chicago White Sox manager, AJ Pierzynski, with us on FT. Bravo.
Don't forget about us little people.
Yeah.
Neither one of you have any shot.
Will you still give us interviews?
Probably not. First of all, I mean, I don't know. It depends on what your definition of serious is.
Wait, for the podcast crowd, that report says AJ Pierzynski is a serious candidate to manage the White Sox in 2025. That's, you know, from 670 The Score, but really coming from our boy Bob Nightingale from USA Today.
Listen, I mean, I was in Chicago all week, had no discussions about being the manager. Would I take the managerial job? I mean, I would love to interview for it or possibly have an opportunity to try to fix this organization because it's not good right now, or at least help fix it somehow. But yeah, this is interesting to me that this kind of came out of nowhere. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know, you know, where it came from or what, but they have a manager. So I don't know where they're thinking they're just going to, I guess they're going to fire the manager. People know things that no one else knows there because Pedro Grifol sure acts like he's still the manager. And I mean, I don't know.
Happen lately? Like what would lead to,
they lost 14 games in a row. They already did that this year. Once,
so. That'll lead to that. I can play this role. Himself. I think it's fair to say there might be a change at the manager position, but to take the next layer, you haven't been interviewed.
No. They have a manager.
I haven't gone
out of my way to talk to anybody about this job. I haven't done anything. I mean, I was in town. I was in town for a golf tournament. I did the Cubs game last Saturday. I did the White Sox game on Saturday. And the way that went, I surely wasn't treated like somebody that they wanted to be around for a long time.
I think there's a better chance you're coaching in like Alabama or Georgia or one of the states that you've been to lately. Yes, Kratz.
I was just going to say, what's a better chance that you're going to be the vice president or that you are going to be the manager of the Chicago White Sox? I mean, it's probably a better chance of me being the vice president at this point.
So, look, some of that is Yaya time, but he would take that job if he was offered that job. And that's what I wanted to clarify. He said they haven't reached out. They have a manager, and he wants to play that politically correct. But he said it with Mullin Haw in April. I'd love to talk about that job. I'd love to do that job.
Well, I'm of two minds here. On the one hand, it is classically White Sox insular and not breaking outside of their mold that has produced one of the worst teams of all time and an organization that is absolutely bereft of positive energy, mm-hmm. with the exception of Brian Bannister. That move would be, in some ways, as we like to say, so White Sox. That it's, well, we know him. He knows how things are going here, and he would just come in, and here's Getz, and here's La Russa, and here's everything. And we have a good idea of mature, grown-up AJ, who is a little bit sanded-down version of irascible, difficult penis AJ. And if – I think he knows baseball. I think he knows how to share opinions. He would just have to find a way. I don't think he necessarily would be unsuccessful.
I know he has the courage to get in players' faces.
But remember what Mark DeRosa always said is the key to leadership is being able to
the ability to tell somebody the truth without getting punched in the face.
And he actually has gotten punched in the face.
Not just by Michael Barrett, but by Brett Tomko. In San Francisco.
If he has learned the ability to say what he wants to say and make his points in a positive and constructive way, uh-huh. and not in a demeaning, snarky, negative way, then he could be successful.
He could be. Don't
punch Brzezinski right in the grill.
I don't know if he's got that ability to not make people want to punch him in the face yet. I don't know. You know, it's like he never did. And you've got to have at least some of that. But with all like the White Sox-ness about it, there's some stuff to really like about it.
You know what?
To me.
An example for me is someone else who I've been around in a clubhouse. I never found Scott Servais particularly likable. I always found him to be kind of sour, and I mean, maybe he also a person who didn't suffer fools gladly, mm-hmm. and didn't want to deal with like sort of regular questions, and was always busy and moving on to other things. But he was somebody who, when you got him going, when he got interested in something, and he had the time, I loved talking to him. He was not easy. But when you could crack the shell a little bit, mm-hmm. I remember him. This is before they would get these detailed scouting reports. And he had rudimentary spray charts on hitters that he sort of did himself, like shaded in these. And I, this is really cool. What is this? And I said, wow, is this? I said, how did you do this? He said, well, there's ways to find out what went where and how to do it. He goes, it's not perfect,
yeah.
but these are places where we can position people. So he was doing that. You know, before anybody even knew what was going on. And Scott Servais has been a pretty good manager.
Yeah, I've been a real good manager. I want to paint the picture of where AJ's headspace is as a potential White Sox managerial fit. You heard him from today, I think, denying that he'd been contacted, but not denying interest. This goes back to 2018, when the Twins were looking for a manager, and they called a former catcher, but it wasn't him.
The Twins are looking for a manager, and yesterday there was a report that David Ross is going to be a candidate, and I want to know what you thought about that, and why are they interviewing the wrong ex-Chicago catcher for that managing job?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask the Twins that question. You know, David Ross puts it out there a lot. He likes to, you know, he tells everyone, you know, that he wants to be a manager, and he wants to do this, and he wants to do that, and, you know, he was on Dancing with the Stars, so he's a big star, so... you know, whatever makes teams happy. I've never said that I 100% want to go into being a manager, but I did play for the Twins, and I do have some history with some people there. But, you know, I've never said I'm happy with the job I'm in. And but, yeah, I mean, it's just all perception and who the media says this and that. I mean, if David Ross gets a job, good for him. I play with Ross. He's a great guy, and wish him the best.
Would you like to be in the mix there? Would you be interested in that manager's job?
Well, I mean, anytime if someone calls you and says, hey, we want you to interview for being a manager, it would be hard to say no.
Man, that's a great grab. David Ross likes to put it out there. He likes to put himself out there. And now AJ has put it out there in a lot of different instances since 2018. He's happy to put it out there.
Here's what I wonder. We know that it's difficult to overcome White Sox culture. That it swallows everything up and makes it worse. Would AJ, as irascible as he can be and as headstrong as he can be,
uh-huh.
would he tell Tony La Russa, hey, stop talking to my players? Or would he just pay lip service to the whole La Russa thing? Or would all the conditions have to be met for him to be hired? How much would he sacrifice? How badly does he want to manage if Jerry Reinsdorf said, look, Tony La Russa is going to be here and making a lot of decisions, and he's the top baseball man of the organization.
This is
Chris Getz is doing this, and you're doing this, and I'm not going to invest in analytics. I am not going to do any of this because Reinsdorf proudly does not want to do that and has told people he's proud that they don't invest in
it. Yeah, and I worry about AJ not kind of being on that side of it.
I'm just saying, like,
a little bit.
If AJ's if he's true to his baseball sensibility compass. and doesn't have to give up too much of it for the job.
Uh-huh.
He could be a force for good,
well,
and a force for change rather than somebody who gets co-opted by bad Sox culture.
Well, hopefully he would bring his whole self, and that would mean some friction, because you have to have friction. Listen to AJ from last year reacting to Chris Getz taking over for Rick Hahn.
This is not a personal knock on Chris Getz at all. He has been the farm director slash whatever the title they've given him for 7 years with the White Sox now. Find me an impact player they've developed. Find me a player that hasn't been a first rounder or a high pick that they've developed out of nowhere to become a major league fixture. You look at their roster, it's all guys that Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams traded for or signed as free agents that have had an impact on him the last few years. Because if you look
at number one picks like Vaughn.
Well, and number one pick. I mean, Andrew Vaughn, yeah. Gavin Sheets. Yes, I get that part of it, but they haven't found the diamond in the rough to make an impact at the major league level. They haven't developed guys from a 12th round pick, right? Boom, 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 worked them up the ladder. Oh, man, this guy can contribute even as a platoon guy. There's not those players, and Chris Getz is in charge of this.
So critical of Getz, and even in their exchanges directly when Getz has been on that show, it's been evident that AJ doesn't love some of the things that Chris Getz has done. That's good. That would be good. You remember, you know, Dan, that Ozzie didn't like a lot of what Kenny was doing, and that was healthy.
Yeah.
It's healthy to have that dissonance and that disagreement.
It was healthy for a while.
I know.
But it was healthy for a while. That became unhealthy fairly quickly, and then everybody observing had to pick a side.
Oh, I know. Joe Cowley would probably want back on the beat if this happens.
But the amount of passive-aggressive
sure.
backrooms, but that's White Sox culture.
Well, but
that's the part of the problem.
But aggressive is how you do stuff. Aggressive actually talking
but
about
through,
stuff.
But not through the media
no,
either.
No. Of course, there'll be people digging around and trying to drum it up. But AJ's sitting there with Chris Getz saying, I don't agree, and not being afraid to piss him off, that could be a very good and healthy thing, in my opinion. That's a big part of why it does intrigue me, is because he's not Robin Ventura being begged to do this when he's raking an outfield in California at a high school.
You know what I think I'd like best? For A.J. Pierzynski to be a candidate for White Sox manager for his second managerial job, not his first. I would like an experienced
man. AJ, or be a bench coach for Terry Francona. If Terry Francona wants to come here and manage a bad team and eat better food.
That too?
Yeah.
Like I think he needs... the perfect opportunity would for at least Ozzie Guillen had time under Bobby Cox
as a third base coach.
But he was there in a Bobby Cox run dugout,
sure.
and yeah, Bobby Cox a piece of crap, but at the time he was really the guy won what 11 straight divisions or whatever it is.
Who's good
at his job?
Who's got the best record in the American League?
The Guardians.
Uh huh. Who's their manager?
Vogt.
Steven Vogt.
Rookie.
0% experience as a manager.
But AJ's got some unique headwinds in that regard.
Actually, he was the bullpen and quality control coach for a year in Seattle.
But
Steven Vogt was.
I take it back.
He had a year. He had a year in Seattle with your guy, Scott Service.
Rather than going right out of the booth, it would be ideal for him to understand the rhythm and the politics and the favorite word of yours, the nuances
I don't know, of
some of those relationships.
I don't know if he would do it for a year, leaving the positions that he's in to go do that for a year and be an intern. Reminds me of Ryan Sandberg going to the minor league system in Philly, right? You know?
Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs.
Yes, in hopes of eventually being a manager somewhere else.
I don't want him though, dude. I want Terry Francona or David Ross. I want David Ross.
You want David Ross?
I want David Ross. I want someone who can turn around this broken clubhouse. The White Sox have told you that by getting rid of Lance Lynn and Yasmani Grandal, that they fixed their clubhouse issue. And they might have fixed the attitude in the clubhouse, But they didn't fix it in terms of bringing someone in to teach guys how to be major leaguers.
No,
David Ross can teach you how to be a major leaguer. So can Terry Francona.
They brought in a fraudulent communicator.
Yes, they did.
Says Stephen Vogt is a really good communicator. Terry Francona is a brilliant communicator. And David Ross is a really good communicator with people. He has that account of likability. He has that mix. It's interesting. One more last piece of the puzzle, but the David Ross thing is really interesting. I can't imagine Francona taking the gig, but I know our guy Bruce has put it out there, and I know he talks to Terry. This is AJ Pruszynski from last week, I believe it was, hanging out on a podcast with White Sox Dave from Barstool, who's wearing a Sell the Team T-shirt. This is AJ reacting to that.
White Sox Dave from Chicago Barstool joining us now. Great to meet you officially.
What's
great to
on?
See you. I love your shirt. Sell the team. Is that what we're doing?
Hold on. Your name is White Sox Dave. What do you mean?
I am saving it for this conversation right here.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm nervous. See, listen, Jerry's a friend of mine, so
yeah, I know.
He's going to do whatever he wants to do because he does own the team.
And, he's aware.
So seeing that shirt, you know, I get it from White Sox fans, but he's also done a lot of good things around here too. Let's not forget.
Go on.
I've heard through.
I mean, he did win 6 championships with the Bulls.
Yeah,
and he did win one with the Mariners
20 years ago.
He's not White Sox ago. Bulls. Yeah. He's White Sox Dave.
Won a World Series.
I know. I'm a Chicago fan Bulls through and Dave. Through. I Bulls understand Dave. The Thank 6 you. Rings with MJ and Scotty and Dennis and Ron Hart and all those guys. I understand. 2005, it broke a 200 season curse in Chicago baseball. Thank you for that. But the last 20 years have been it's embarrassing.
What do you say to the White Sox that say back to you fans that say come out to the games and we'll have more money to spend?
That's absolutely unfair.
So that's where
I gotta get that time in our lives back and listen to that.
Well, that's where AJ is.
Good Lord.
AJ is extremely pro Jerry and loyal to Jerry while being vocal about Getz in a slightly contradictory way and very much wanting the job. I think all of that coalesces together beautifully as a candidate for that job next year.
And by the way, it's not a Chicago baseball curse. What the hell was that? What is he talking about?
I tuned out for that.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Jerry demands loyalty. That's first and foremost. Yeah. If you're not loyal now, you're not going to get the job.
Mm-hmm.
Which you know how it works. The interview process or whatever it is, but it's like picking a pope. Like until he lights his cigar, like Red Auerbach behind that desk, it's not done. I'm not kidding.
I would not greet an AJ hire with some classic White Sox cynicism. I would not greet it that way. I would actually see it as something that has a chance to work as long as higher ups in the organization, like your guy Brian Bannister, who you guys spoke to last week.
Brian Bannister should be running the team.
He's basically running all things pitching.
But he's not, though. He's not. He's doing it on his terms. He floats and helps and does. He tumbles and he's got his little things he can do. But I wish he had more responsibility. I think it's both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive. I think you can be hopeful that things could be different and it could all be underpinned by a completely healthy and appropriate amount of cynicism.
Top of the hour, we will get to what the Cubs are doing with that trade yesterday and what might still be to come tonight and tomorrow as the deadline looms tomorrow at 6 p.m. A Caleb Williams comp we may have to live with coming up a little bit later in the hour, but when we come back, let's get you up to date on everything that's going on in the trade deadline, because frankly it's a lot. It's busy around MLB. It's Parkins and Spiegel with Burnsy in for Danny on the Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station. The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Well, that, and there's the name.
Afternoons on the Score.
The 1-2. And it goes all the way to the backstop. And it went behind the batter as Kopech stumbled, making his delivery to home plate. And now the winning run at third. One out, 6-6 in the ninth. Everybody on their feet at the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. Kopech is ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. High, and he almost threw it away. Martin Maldonado with a leaping grab, and the count is full. And for Kopech, he may be a little bit rattled.
You think?
Man.
Fire.
The great Tom Hamilton on the call. Beavis Kopech? Is that where you're going?
I am Cornholio.
He turns into the great Cornholio. It's not just regular Beavis. Regular Beavis is fine. It's when he becomes Cornholio.
Throw it harder.
Beavis has more value than Michael Kopech. How did they get anything for that mental midget?
It's mean to call him a mental midget. That hurts my soul a little bit.
Okay, but hold on. I like Michael Kopech as a person, but we've been dealing with this for a long time.
Wait a minute.
Isn't that exactly what he is?
Weren't we the show that liked Michael Kopech so much because he was so upfront with his struggles?
All of a sudden
he's gone and now he's a mental midget.
That's why I objected right away.
My objection is more to the term.
Oh, dump yours and not mine?
it occurred to me when I said it.
Yeah, no. It's a very sad...
I'm sorry if that phrase is outdated, but...
No, it's not that it's outdated. It's just a little mean. It's a little mean for a guy who clearly is overwhelmed. But, I mean, look, I don't know that...
No, he doesn't mean mean toward Kopech. He means mean with the usage of the term that should not be used anymore at all.
Yeah, I don't care how Michael feels about it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know if that phrase was...
A mental vertically challenged? Is that where we go?
Go ahead, make it worse.
Yeah, see, Dan, you see what we do here? This is what we do, 2 to 6, every day.
Now, I think we can have a little empathy for the clear mental and emotional struggles which have kept Michael Kopech from reaching his apex.
If we assume they have.
At least I do. I thoroughly do assume that they have. I thoroughly do believe that they have. And his openness about it has been exemplary. But in the end, if you can't deal with it, then it can hold you back.
Or he's just not good enough.
Well, no, I think I think he is good enough. I think the way that those pitches move, the way that that arm performs, I think he is good enough. This will be another case of a guy like, okay, well, let's see what the Dodgers can do with him. Let's see what another team can do, what another org can do. At the very least, it's a sad end to 8 years of Michael Kopech conversation and life with him that we have had. Think about everything from when he got here and the legend of the 104-mile-per-hour guy in the minors. Or is it even faster than that that was in the minors? It was like a 107 or 108 in the minors. And the Instagram life of his reality TV star girlfriend at the time. Dad who had built the mound next to the barn in Texas wanting to turn him into the next great Texas fireballer. And all the pressure that was on him for that. Kopech night when he debuted as a starter. And it was like, oh my God, here we go. The Sox got a guy. And I remember,
but it was Sox fans doing it.
I remember a Sunday night baseball game on ESPN when he threw 7 dominant shutout innings and was the post-game interviewee, I think, on Van Pelt Sports Center. It was like, man, here he is. And there's been so many different moments of possibly believing in that. And then here he is as basically a throw-in in an increasingly strange 3-team deal as official terms have gotten now released on this stuff. This is a weird-ass trade.
I have to interrupt really quickly. I promise it'll be quick. But someone on our staff... feels attacked by the phrase that I used, calling Michael Kopech a mental something.
Okay.
Someone on our staff feels attacked and he wants an apology.
So?
I'm very sorry, Tyler Buterbaugh.
Did he get in touch?
He texted me immediately.
That's awesome.
I would have done attacked. So. I would have done for so him. Too.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him. You should.
Sorry, we had a good laugh back here about that.
Good. I hope Tyler did Tyler.
See, it would have been funny if it was Tyler Farengold.
Just it's just all the Tylers have been offended.
Right, for some reason, it's just coincidental. Yeah.
Tyler Hansbrough just called the hotline.
And a corn hit him on the head.
Acorn.
These are the 10 most similar pitchers to Michael Kopech at this point.
Oh, my God. At this point in his Major League Baseball career, is one of them Nate Pearson?
I could do pitchers through age 27, or I could do full career.
Do full career to this
full
point.
Career from 10 to 1. Ready?
Yeah.
Square Moore. Number 9 is Bob Brown. Hello there. Number 8, Nate Karns. Number 7, Josiah Gray. Number 6 is Dave Stenhouse.
Wow.
Number 5, Buster Narum. Number 4, Sam Deduno. Number 3,
Robinson Chirico.
John Patterson.
I wish I asked for the ones through age 27.
Number 2 is Marion Fricano. And number 1.
Oh, the freak.
And number 1.
She was a great soprano. Marion Fricano, a great soprano.
Number 1, Johan Oviedo.
Okay. All right, that did very little for me.
I could have made up same. All of those.
Right? I mean, Tanny, that did all very little.
Bears training camp is on.
I thought we'd get one name in there where I heard of
Josiah Gray was a big-time prospect that then faded into relief, utility, and then eventually just gone.
And I thought Dave Stenhouse had some...
Stenhouse has a claim to fame. Wasn't he the Red Sox pitcher, Stenhouse?
Yes, but what was his claim to fame? There was something...
Yeah, there was... There's...
Stenhouse.
In the middle of our street, Stenhouse. There was some reason why he mattered. Washington, it says he played for.
Yeah.
The Senators.
Yeah, there was.
I don't know. I don't remember. A father of Mike Stenhouse. Maybe you're thinking of Mike Stenhouse.
It could be. I forget.
Woof, look at that dude.
But anyway, thanks for that.
Yeah, he was on Boston in 86, Mike Stenhouse. Hey,
that's great. Thank you for that list.
God, he's bad.
Here are the terms of the trade. The White Sox receive Miguel Vargas, 24-year-old, one-time big-time Dodgers prospect who has floundered in the bigs but will be a plug-and-play position player for the White Sox immediately and given a long, long leash to prove himself viable. So that's the big piece. And then two prospects, Alexander Albertis and Gerald Perez. They also got a player to be named later or cash considerations from the Dodgers. They got nothing from the Cardinals. The Cardinals get Eric Fetty and Tommy Pham in exchange for a player to be named later or cash consideration.
Does anyone think they're going to take the player to be named later or the cash?
Oh, no.
Which one?
Oh, wait,
what do the White Sox always choose to take?
Yeah, no, they'll take the cash. The Cardinals get a player to be named later or cash from the Dodgers, and the Cardinals get cash considerations from the White Sox. Ooh. The White Sox gave them cash on top.
Okay, hold on.
Fetty and Pham.
The Sox paid... To send three major leaguers
away
for one major leaguer.
And let me finish what the Dodgers get. Dodgers get Tommy Edman from the Cardinals, Michael Kopech from the White Sox, and a pitcher named Oliver Gonzalez, a 17-year-old who the Cardinals signed in June. So the Cardinals signed a 17-year-old and then threw him to the Dodgers in order for the Dodgers to give up more to the White Sox. Cardinals, all they give up is Tommy Edman, who hasn't played all year, and this kid who they just signed, his 17-year-old. They were under a mandate, Dan, to keep their payroll flat, and they successfully did that because Tommy Pham, only under contract for this year. Eric Fetty, what is it, 2-year, $15 million deal that includes next year, okay? So it's nothing. And Tommy Edman was due $9.5 million through next year. So they actually are going to save money because the White Sox gave them money in addition.
Save big money with the Sox.
Chris Getz got absolutely fleeced here.
You don't know that yet. There's something you're not considering.
Oh, well, hold on. Miguel Vargas has to be a badass for this to be worth anything.
Speaks. This is a player to be named later or cash. There's no one out there saying that it's not Shohei Ohtani. They just haven't named him yet. Or Mookie Betts. They haven't named him yet.
I mean, this
They'll name him later.
This is an amazingly small, unimpressive return for giving up three big leaguers at the deadline, including one of them who has a top 20 ERA in all of baseball.
Well, wait a second.
Eric Fetty is a great find by you and a great signing by you and has another year on the deal, and you had to include Pham, who should have been just a little sign and flip.
Yeah, nobody really wants Pham.
They should. They should. I mean, Pham was a middle of the order hitter in the World Series last year for the Diamondbacks.
And he's a proven pain in the ass.
I know. But I mean, you're turning Eric Fetty into this, and you had to also give up Kopech and Pham?
So what is
this? This is horrendous on the face of it.
So wait, the deadline's not here yet. So what does that mean for anything they're still considering regarding Crochet and Luis Robert Jr.?
I don't know.
Does this lower your level of trust?
Yeah, and I was reserving judgment till I saw the entire haul from everything. But right now, in just this deal, we have official terms from this deal, it is staggering how little they got.
So the White Sox have recalled outfielder Dominic Fletcher and left-handed pitcher Sammy Peralta from Charlotte, and they have selected the contract of Touki Toussaint from Charlotte. So Touki has returned. If you're a fan of Touki Toussaint,
we love Touki.
I like cheer him on.
Let's wear our Sox hats again tomorrow.
I'm going to wear my Touki Toussaint jersey tomorrow.
Dominic Fletcher was supposed to be part of the core when they traded for him, and he started the year and just sucked ass.
You know what we call him, Dan? The croissant. Touki the croissant Toussaint.
It is possible that Chris Getz doesn't know what he's doing.
It's entirely possible. It is that is a frighteningly bad trade. I'm sorry.
It's just such a chore to try to care. It really is. It's the hardest thing, and it's sad. It's sad for those of us that spent so much time in our childhood caring so much about this team. It's so hard to care. I'm trying, and I think I'm failing.
When did you lose it? There's a pretty clear time, at least for Tanny and I, but when do you think you lost it?
Well, there's professional reasons and there's sort of personal fandom reasons. I do think once I covered the White Sox as a reporter that you have to change that channel, and it's just got to go by the wayside. You've got a job to do, and you have to be professionally adversarial, and so that changes everything. But even so, the deepest, like, reptile brain, fan brain, it was the hiring of Tony La Russa that completely ended it for me.
Absolutely. And I think that ended it for a lot of people. Watching the face of Rick Hahn having, you know, being essentially in an internment camp as he had to accept Tony La Russa being foisted upon him by the owner and his vanity.
He should have resigned. And it's clear
right
now
then,
since his firing.
Right
it was,
then, there that day.
And look, Lawrence said it immediately. He said, you got to step down. You can't sit there like a hostage and take it and speak in the passive voice. And it was true. I think he would have been better served resigning.
So, top of the hour, we'll get into the Cubs trade from yesterday and what it all means. But coming up next, a Caleb Williams comp, which we may have to live with during training camp and the preseason schedule. We'll do that next. It's Parkins and Spiegel with Bernsey in for Parkins on the Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
Pat McGann.
I feel like I'm in a garage on the south side, but you guys have an antenna. That's like the biggest difference.
Yeah.
Afternoons on the Score.
I would say the C.J. Stroud thing is unfair to any rookie quarterback, number one.
That's Mike Mayock from last weekend, a great book by Steve Rosenblum on Saturday Suckage. This is Spiegs and Dan Bernstein on the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Danny will be back tomorrow. C.J. Stroud is the dream comp for Caleb Williams. Coming up at 5 o'clock, by the way, a full Bears report with our guy Mark Grody and lots of sound.
Sorry, but this kind of guitar solo is my pet peeve, and Nirvana does it all the time. The guitar solo that recapitulates the lead vocal.
The melody?
I don't need that.
It's by design, though.
But why do... it's? I heard the lead vocal.
Yeah.
I know how those notes go. Uh-huh. I heard him sing it, and I'm sure you can play it note for note, but play a solo.
Well, no. It's not about a solo. It's not about showing off the chops. It's about trying to grill a melody into your brain because they feel that the melody and the way it sits against the chords creates an atmosphere and an emotion that he wants to like show you is really the simplest of the intents of the song.
What Keith Richards used to call finding the drone?
No, I don't know. I think it's just it's a matter of just echoing what the message is. Think of it like a Mark Rothko painting. Like, let's not get too showy with everything, shall we? Just let me give you my intent and drill it into your brain and your soul.
I thought that Kurt Cobain's vocal was successful in doing that, and I could have used a different angle.
I'm all right with the guitar tone hammering at home myself.
It's okay.
Well,
Nirvana is probably the most guilty of that particular
thing. You know, if we have time a little later, I'd love to talk with you about an event that I didn't attend and wish I did that has gone on all weekend on a musical level.
Sure.
If we have time.
Yeah, I'm here.
But you heard Mike Mayock talking about CJ Stroud. This morning, Brad Biggs in his must-hear hit when he said, "Morning, boys, what's going on?" It wasn't line quality, but it was still pretty good. His "Morning, boys, what's going on?" Was talking to those guys about Caleb struggling over the last couple of days and what that might mean in regards to that dream comp of last year's CJ Stroud.
It would have been insane to think Caleb Williams was going to come in to these training camp practices and it was just going to be an instant fireworks show for the offense. And if you go back and kind of look at how things developed for CJ Stroud last year in Houston, I mean, it takes a little time. Like, Stroud was horrible in the Houston preseason opener last year. Awful.
Right.
Okay. So, and I don't know if Caleb will play Thursday night in Canton, but.
What's your gut feeling?
My gut feeling is no.
Well, we'll see about that. But Stroud last year in the preseason ended up totaling 11 of 18 for 89 yards, a touchdown, and one interception in just 8 series over 3 games. And he apparently improved as the preseason went on to compile those numbers. So you think we're going to see Caleb struggle here in the preseason? And how should we react to it if we do?
It doesn't count. And I'm not going to worry too much until it counts. I want him to make his mistakes. He's never seen NFL speed before. He hasn't. And regular season speed is different from preseason speed, but he hasn't seen it. And if he needs to calibrate his targeting system based on the way these guys move, the way to do that is make mistakes. And
yeah, I'm good with mistakes, man.
But I've got
at this point.
The problem is I don't know the extent to which I trust the new coaches. I don't know if Shane Waldron is good at his job. And there's so many unknowns.
I don't think he has to be great at his job for
I
this.
Didn't say great.
I know. You don't think he's serviceable good?
I don't know. He's never coordinated a Bears offense before.
No. He hasn't, but oh man, I think he can set up a playbook and get guys in the right spot, and he's got incredible veteran wide receivers and incredible, really good veteran tight ends. I think it doesn't take much.
He has them until they're hurt.
I know, but I don't think it takes much to get this offense serviceable. Texter's getting in on your Nirvana thought, by the way.
Yeah.
As a teenager, my mind was blown when I realized Kurt Cobain could solo when I heard him covering Zeppelin songs. I realized all the other solos were intentionally un-solo-esque. Yes, they are intentional. And it's minimalist, and there's wisdom in that, and it caused a good effect.
The 815 says Weezer does that, too. Always annoyed me. Weezer has some levels of complexity to their music far beyond what Nirvana's done, though. Even in their more emo, sort of punky stuff.
Well, they've also done more than 2 records. I don't know.
Well, alive still. They had the chance.
I was extrapolating.
Yeah. I wonder what Cobain would have done guitar-wise as he continued.
He probably would have found a way to snort it. The guitar.
That guy, huh?
It finds it. You could just.
Are you a Weezer guy, Dan?
I like Weezer. Yeah,
okay, me too.
I do.
Yeah,
I believe Rivers Cuomo is one of the. He and Tom Morello share a Harvard education, don't they?
I know Morello does. Yeah. I don't know about Rivers Cuomo.
I thought Rivers
the
Cuomo
alternated days at Harvard, or how did that work?
They didn't share a desk.
But they have one degree that they send right back and forth to each other.
Yeah, no, they Weezer had me at the video for the dude looks
Buddy
like
Holly.
Buddy Holly.
Well, that whole the blue album is, you know.
I mean,
what is genius with these homies dissing my girl?
Why do they got a front?
Oh, God. They got a front.
All right, I don't care about that.
God. Yeah. Well done.
Nice. Way to bring it home.
We got a break? Say it ain't so. We got a break.
Ah, damn. I wish I was on an island in the sun right now.
Jeez. This is...
Whoa.
Puns. We're making puns.
Thanks for being here, Dan.
Let's talk about third base swappage and what it means from the Cubs' perspective. Mark Grody in an hour with a Bears report, but it's Spiegs and Bernstein. Roll it on a hot trade deadline show here on 670 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.